And welcome into a special edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. I've always said that Wednesdays are anything goes, and this is no exception. There's a saying in radio that the reason that everyone knows everyone else is because it's the same 100 people going after the same 99 jobs. So it's a close-knit industry. Sometimes, though, the people that you work with become more than just coworkers. Sometimes they become friends that you consider as close as family. Many of you know Elizabeth Kay as the longtime host of the Elizabeth and Radar Mixed Morning Show on 99.1 WMYX. To me, though, Elizabeth is someone who fits the bill as someone that I consider family. Elizabeth and I sat down this past Sunday in her home's basement bar to talk about, at the beginning of the conversation, how long we've known each other and the odd role that I play in all of the big moments seemingly in her life. But more importantly, the journey that she's been on for the last year with her own family, specifically her mother-in-law, Camille, who awaits a new kidney. The donor is Elizabeth. This is a deeply personal conversation that does get emotional, but Elizabeth wanted to do it to bring awareness to living organ donation, which is hugely important. The conversation is uncut. This is her story. I tried to just do my best to stay out of it. So this seems really formal. I'm down here in your bar basement and there's microphones in front of us. What the hell?
This is just a normal Sunday afternoon, Doug. I don't know what you're talking about. We're always recording down here at the bar.
Right. somebody asked me this, a couple of weeks ago, and I forgot who it was, but somebody had seen something about an interaction you and I had on social media. It's like, how do you know Elizabeth Kay? How long have you known each other?
It was one of the producers at Fox 6.
Okay.
That put that together.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about it, and I don't know. I mean, I know where we first met. I know sort of when it was. You were filling in with Kid O'Shea.
Yep.
You weren't fully there at the mix yet, but you were filling in. When was that?
That was almost 12 years ago to the date, Doug. That was in January of 2008 when I had moved back to Milwaukee. I was doing radio up in Green Bay, decided to move back home, and I was working first stage children's theater. I was doing full-time work there, and they needed a fill-in on the morning show on the mix, so I was filling in, and my coworker at first stage was dating your morning show partner, Mike Wickett.
Okay.
So I went out of my way to say hi and introduce myself to Mike Wickett, and then that's when I met you.
All right, fair enough. So somebody asked me, have I known you longer than my own wife? So then if it's 2008, the answer is yes.
Yeah, because it would be almost 13 years then.
Right. And I've known you longer than you've known your husband, and I've known your husband longer than I've known you. Then you've known him.
Yes.
Shit.
Yeah, I know. Right. It gets really confusing. That's kind of the funny thing about when I met Eric, who goes by his last name, Hammy.
Right.
So all these years of working with all you guys at the radio station at Entercom, people would talk about Hammy. This guy Hammy, you know Hammy. And I used to always tell them, no, I don't know who, what is a Hammy? Like, I don't even know what any of that was.
Somebody was able, just about ready to find out.
Yeah, I know, exactly. So then when I did meet Eric Hammy and we hit it off pretty quickly, it was sort of funny to go back in time and he and I realize how many people we knew mutually and just how many times our paths kind of crossed, but the timing wasn't right because your wedding, I would have met him there.
Right.
But there was a change of plans and I couldn't go to your wedding. So that wasn't, it's timing, Doug. It's all timing.
It's always timing.
Yes.
It's always timing. And then, because you're Eric Hammy, he was one of my groomsmen in my wedding. So then 5 years later, when the two of you meet and get married. By the way, here's the oddest thing about this whole relationship. Every time that there's seemingly something big in your life, I'm like in the background blurry in the pictures.
You can always see Doug's head.
Right. It's always back there.
Yes, because when the proposal happened on New Year's Eve, you were there and Doug's head's in the background. And then the wedding that happened, Doug, along with my sister, married us. And the focus is naturally on Eric and myself, the bride and groom, and my stepson, Brayson, who was all up front. There's this great picture of Brayson in between us holding up both of our hands, kind of like, we did it. And then there's Fuzzy Doug in the background.
It's probably the way that it's best.
Doug, even in the wedding video, when we're signing the marriage license, you are walking right in the background in that one scene where they're zoomed in on the marriage license. There's Doug.
There's like a guy that used to try to crash the Super Bowl post-game show in the locker rooms, and you can see him like just in the background of every Super Bowl winning photograph from like Super Bowl 3 to Super Bowl 40 or something like that. I feel like that's my role in your life.
Well, you know what? I would compare that wedding day to a Super Bowl. It was a pretty big victory for me, so yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
It was.
So tell us about, you've been at the Mix now. Does it seem like you've been there for, how long have you been like the full-time host on the morning
full-time show? 11 years. It was 11 years this past June.
Okay.
Yes, but I was filling in, like we mentioned, for about a year and a half until the full-time job was offered to me.
Okay. What's been the best part about that job?
Well, I feel like I should say I met my husband through that job, since that's kind of how I ultimately met him.
Yeah, but he's sitting 3 feet away, so don't worry about him. He's fine.
And he's our bartender here at Hammer's Pub.
By the way, good job.
We're drinking Aces. Spiked hot apple cider.
Cheers.
Cheers. To ask me what is the best part is so hard to answer because there are...
It's a podcast. We got a lot of time. Go ahead.
But there are so many things about this job that are unbelievable. Like, for starters, all the people that we get to meet. I mean, we are in the community. We are in Milwaukee, and that's my home city, so that's a perk. To be able to wake up my hometown is great because there are ways for me to be a part of my niece and nephew's mornings, my parents' mornings. I can be a part of these people's lives without physically being there because they're listening to the morning show. But the people I've met, like I said, my husband, so many friends, you, that part's been so rewarding. But let's also break down how fun this job is.
Oh, it's pretty fun.
We legitimately get paid to talk about Taylor Swift and the Kardashians and the Green Bay Packers and what's going on in Milwaukee. And we're raising money for Feeding America Eastern Wisconsin with Stuff the Bus. And we're playing awesome music. And we can wear sweatpants to work. And it's never really serious. It's always fun. And it's positive. And it's upbeat. And that is priceless because there's so much going on in the world, especially in 2020. And to be able to go into a job where you work with a really close friend and you're just laughing and having fun. I mean, that part's been amazing.
In terms of the partnership that you have now with Radar, how long has that been now?
That's been 20 years in the making.
So it goes way it started in the building that I work in now.
Yeah, exactly. When I went to college at UWM, I went to school for PR and advertising, and then we had to do a radio commercial. And I started thinking in this advertising class, I'm like, you know, this is really fun. I really like doing this. And I was DJing weddings at the time. And I had emceed a couple events in high school with Carrie Wendt, who's on the Bob and Brian show. Mm-hmm. And I remember talking to her about radio my senior year of high school. And it kind of had the wheels turning. And so we were doing this radio ad. And I thought, maybe I want to do radio. Then I went to a concert soon after that FM 106 was putting on at the Waukesha County Fairgrounds. And I see this short little redhead girl walk up on stage and she's giving away T-shirts and she's talking about how if you listen the next morning, we're going to give away a trip. And I'm with my friend Maggie and I'm like, who is that on stage? She said, that's the morning show DJ. That's Karen. And I said, I want that job. I want to do what she does. Mm-hmm. So I went back to class on Monday, talked to one of the instructors and I said, we did this radio commercial. I was just at this concert. I saw this lady on stage. I kind of want to know about how I can be a radio DJ. Coincidentally, one of her students who ran the lab department at UWM, so where you'd go to do one of your TV video projects or a radio project, he was like the lab instructor. He worked at Clear Channel, it was at the time.
Sure.
So she got me in contact with him, and he said, well, that's FM 106. You want an internship there? He said, they're always looking for interns. I said, yeah, that'd be awesome. So I interview with Radar, who's the producer of the Karen and Scott Morning Show. He's now my morning show partner.
Sure.
And I was so nervous because I did not have any radio experience whatsoever. And the other part of the story is my major wasn't in radio, so the guidance counselor wouldn't give me college credit for this internship. So my roommate, who was a graphics design major, made a fake document. She just took the took the document that you would have used if, I was in PR and advertising at the time. So let's say it was a document for that internship. She took all of that, but she pulled off like the UWM logo. I don't know. She made it look official. Mm-hmm. And I will never forget when Radar said, yeah, we'll bring you on. Do you have any paperwork I need to sign? And I slide this piece of paper across to him. And in my head, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I'm not someone that does scams. I don't lie. I don't break the law. And I'm looking at him. Look at this form. He signs it, gives it back to me. And I thought, holy crap. Like, I'm in. Okay, cool. I got this internship, which they ultimately found out I wasn't getting credit for. But they hired me. So
even better.
Yeah, even better. But Radar back then, so that was 20 years ago, he back then started just mentoring me. I mean, he helped me put an air check together. He gave me advice. He was the person that helped me get my first on-air air shift, which was Friday night, midnight to 5 a.m.
Okay.
You know, prime time.
Yeah.
When everyone's,
been there, done that.
When everyone's listening.
Sure.
All the truck drivers and all the people that are leaving the bars, because it's a country station.
Of course.
And he just gave me so much advice. I remember saying to him, hey, we should do a morning show together one day. And he politely said, yeah, maybe we'll do that. When he's thinking, okay, this girl is not ready for this yet. And he helped me get my first job in Green Bay. And we stayed in touch all these years. And when Kid O'Shea left the mix in, when would that have been? Oh, that was right after our wedding. So that would have been 2015. I reached out to Radar then. Mm. And I said, hey, I want you to come over here. What do you think? Well, he had a contract and he was locked in and didn't happen. But then a couple years later, timing was right. And now he's been with me 3 years, going on four.
See, everything comes back to timing.
I know. It's wild. It's wild to think I've known him for 20 years.
What did you want to do when you started college then, if you weren't a broadcasting major?
Well, I was communications is what I went to college for, and then PR and advertising, because I just thought, oh, I like, you know, PR stuff. And I thought advertising was interesting. But when I changed my major because I knew I wanted to get into radio, I still had the PR advertising degree that I did finish. But then I went for a focus on journalism broadcasting. But their program was focused on TV. I learned radio from my internship.
Interesting.
That I wasn't getting credit for.
Right. Well, fast forward now to 2020. And I joke with my wife, Erica, it's like everyone that I know eventually is going to wind up on this podcast.
Yes.
So this is your turn, I suppose. So I wanted to give a little background of that, how you and I knew each other and know each other. But the other half of this is that what you're doing right now. And I've known that your mother-in-law, Camille, I've known her for obviously many, many years as well. And she's been very upfront about her kidney disease.
Mm-hmm.
The gift that you are right now trying to give her is priceless, astonishing, the most selfless thing I've ever been able to imagine. Talk me through the timeline of how it began to where we are today.
Well, first, thank you for saying that. And you know Camille and know that she is everyone's mom.
Right.
I mean, she is. There's no other way to describe it. She's just amazing. And there's nothing that I don't think anybody wouldn't do for someone like her who's totally selfless. But it was about a year ago. We found out. Well, let me back up here. I'm not going to go too far in the history books, but when Camille was born. When Camille was born, she found out, or her parents found out because she was a baby, that she had poor functioning kidneys. So with that being said, it is normal for her every year to have these routine kidney tests done. That's something we all know. We're all used to that. Mm-hmm. But we also know that there one day could come a time where maybe the kidneys weren't going to be functioning well. Exactly. You know what I mean? Like, we knew this was a possibility. So Camille came to our house the week of Christmas. My son Brayson was home. We were all home. And she told us, I mean, I think it was like 3-4 days before Christmas. She sat us down and said, I had my routine tests in October. The numbers weren't good, which surprised her, surprised us. She looked fine. She was feeling fine. And then she went back in for some Like more invasive testing just to make sure there wasn't that the test goofed, and they found out that she was in stage 4 kidney failure. So she came over the week of Christmas and told us all this. And I can remember sitting there, honestly thinking about Brayson. You know, when you're a parent or when kids are around, you never want them to be scared. But in my head, I was thinking, stage 4 is, that's like, she's been given a terminal diagnosis. Like what, like, you know, you get that news, you're like, sure. Wait, what does this mean? What's next? I mean, honestly, my thought was, oh my God, like, is she going to like die here? Like in 6 months, a year, like, what are you, I mean, your head is just like, what is going on? And it's the week of Christmas. And so we're trying to keep it together at the table. And she's always been a very honest person. And she even said, I'm not going to keep anything for any of you guys throughout this whole process. And then we asked her, we said, what's next? Dialysis or kidney transplant? And she said, I don't know anything yet. I don't know. We just have to wait and see. And it was a lot, Doug. Like, I mean, that conversation, so many thoughts are going through your mind. So we had Christmas that week with the family, and it was a really emotional Christmas, but we all were kind of holding it in again for the kids because of Brayson and my nephew, Jack. But she, you know, gave really sentimental gifts that year, and we all knew what she was doing. Mm-hmm. She was facing her mortality and the realization of, would she even be here for next Christmas? So it all kind of then was up in the air in early 2020 of what was going to happen next. But then COVID hit in March. And for someone like her, who's in kidney failure and diabetic.
And a healthcare worker.
Exactly. It was very unsettling because we knew we had to be really careful. And we have been this whole year very careful. And we haven't seen the family a whole lot in person because of COVID. But in the spring, she went through the testing to be put on the transplant list at UW Health. Now, to tell you how selfless my mother-in-law is, she never once asked a single person to come forward to see if they would give a kidney. She never asked.
How do you ask that?
Exactly. You know? How do you? But she never did.
Sure.
In the summer, when she got the green light that she is ready to get a kidney, we all went forward to, you know, fill out paperwork and talk to the social workers and start sending medical records. And she called me and said, you're not going to believe what happened. The nurse coordinator at UW Health out in Madison called her and said, Camille, I don't know you very well, but you must be pretty special because you had over 100 people fill out paperwork wanting to give you a kidney.
It's amazing.
And when she was on the phone with me, she was so overcome with emotion, and I'm emotional too. So we're crying, and she just said, I can't even believe it. And she's someone that never wants to ask for help. She's the person that helps everyone else. And I told her, I said, this is people showing you how much they love you and how much they appreciate you. So take that in, you know, welcome that. And she said, it's hard for me to do that. And it was just really incredible to see so many people come forward, but they only talk to groups at a time, because it's a lengthy process. So the first group of people was immediate family. And it came down to my husband, Eric, and I. We made it through the first couple rounds of evaluating, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then we both had to go to UW Madison in November. So this took about 6 months to go through the final testing.
I want to rewind a couple of moments ago when you were talking about the evaluation process and what the steps are, because one of the goals of what I want to do with this podcast is educate people who are facing the diagnosis that Camille was almost exactly a year ago, and what that evaluation process is, what it means, what it entails, the paperwork that one has to fill out. I know it's really granular, but
It's very easy. The first few steps are very easy. You just go online, and I don't know the website offhand because it's through UW Health, but I'll get that to you so you can make sure to link it all up wherever
We'll put that in there.
But you go online and you fill out this basically evaluation, and they ask you just some standard health questions, kind of like what they'd ask you if you were about to give blood.
Okay.
They ask you, have you been exposed to COVID? Have you ever tested positive for COVID? Have you, as a woman, ever gotten pregnant? Did you successfully have the baby? What's your medical history? And it's not very in depth, but they'll ask you, does cancer run in your family? Does diabetes run in your family? Maybe, I guess, the best way to compare it is if you go to the doctor and you have to fill out one of those health forms, mm-hmm. that's what the first step is.
Okay.
And then from there, they'll call you. And then they ask you a little more details about those questions. So if you say, yes, cancer runs in my family, well, on in that phone call, they'll ask, have you lost a sibling to cancer? Have you lost a grandparent to cancer? Your parents, have you lost them to cancer? And they get down to the nitty gritty. They then at that point want to know blood type. And then they sort of talk about what it would mean to give a kidney to someone. They just kind of really tap the surface of that, really. Mm-hmm. And from there, you just wait to see, did you pass that test? And somehow from that point, they then, if you pass that test, then they ask for medical records. And that for some people may be a challenge, mm-hmm. depending on how often you go to the doctor or not.
Sure.
If you have, if you're like Eric and I, and we go once a year to the doctor, you just log on to your prohealth.com and get all your medical records. But that could be the lengthy part for some people.
Sure. Okay, so when the social worker asks you about what it's like...
The nurse coordinator. At this point, you're working with the nurse coordinator, yeah.
I mean, I think a lot of people are like, in theory, because, you know, a surgery would be so far in the distance, and it sounds like something that is more abstract than real for a lot of people, I would imagine.
Yeah, you're right. Very much so.
What do they ask, and how do they pass you through to, you know, maybe the more invasive rounds when they really get into the guts of, you know, do you really want to do this?
Well, that happens when you go to Madison, and that question and conversation happens with the social worker. That's when you really get into the mental aspect of what's about to happen if you're going to give someone a kidney. But when they look at the medical records, that's when they decide, however they do, if you are going to be a match. I mean, blood type's a huge part in all of this too, because they have to make sure that you are compatible with the person naturally. But you are not privy to the recipient's medical information. So a couple times in this process, there have been certain things that I kind of want to ask, like, well, what's Camille's blood type, or what's this situation with Camille's health? And they can't tell me that stuff.
Sure.
Just like she does not know anything going on with any of us going through this process unless we tell her. We knew it was just Eric and I because she was told there were two people that were going to Madison. Well, she knows both of us.
Sure.
So but we don't know how far anybody else got unless they are forthcoming with that information.
So I would imagine that, okay, 100 people step forward. It's a nice round number. What's the percentage that would get typically to the next round? Do you have any idea?
Percentage? I don't know. The fact that there were that many people, they told us from the get-go, we're pretty confident we're going to find a match in this group because there's so many people.
So it doesn't have to be a blood relative, in other words.
No, not at all. And that's something that we learned in this process. And we'll get to that when we talk about kind of what happened in Madison, mm-hmm. that there are actually times that they will tell blood relatives that you may be an okay match, but not the best match. And that's where the paired kidney exchange program comes in, which is really important to talk about in this conversation, what that means and how that can get your loved one a better kidney and faster.
All right, so let's fast forward through that first process when you're speaking with the nurse coordinator. What's the weight gap between when you speak to them, when you clear that first hurdle, to when the next step is? Is it a lot of sitting around and waiting, or
is it
front in your mind?
It has been because of COVID. COVID has really delayed this process a lot. The specifics of why, I don't know, but they've just said that it's delayed because of COVID. So in my head, I think it's probably because if someone gets sick, then they have to be quarantined. I mean, everyone's dealing with that. So it's just been pushed back. But when I talked to Thomas, the nurse coordinator, and sent medical records, that was probably towards the end of summer. And then it wasn't until October, so probably about 2 months, until he said, okay, we want you and your husband separately because of COVID.
Sure.
And we just happened to be married. That's not normal. They kept saying that. That's not normal that we both made it that far in the process. And obviously we're not biologically related at all, but it's just very uncommon.
Sure.
But we had to go separately to those appointments, and that didn't happen until November.
So just from your standpoint, do you think about this every day, or were you thinking about it every day?
Yes. Every
front,
day.
Front of mind.
Yes. Every day since we found out the diagnosis. Absolutely. And for so many reasons. One, because she's my mother-in-law, but she's my other mom.
Yeah.
I mean,
like you said, she's everybody's mom.
She's everybody's mom. I mean, I love Camille. Also because of what this means for my son, Brayson, and for my husband. And because you can't go anywhere without conversations of COVID. And COVID naturally made me think of Camille, because you see the numbers going up in Wisconsin. Why? We're wearing masks and some people are giving us a hard time about it. We don't need to go down that road. But people don't know what was happening in our personal life with our loved one and how careful we needed to be. Also because I knew at any point, Eric or myself are going to get called to go to Madison. And we don't want to have COVID delay anything. Because while this is also going on, Camille's kidney functioning has gotten worse. She's not in stage 5, but now her kidneys are only functioning at 17%. When she told us the news, don't quote me the exact number, but it was less than 30%. So we had to really hurry this process up.
So tell me about the phone call. What immediately floods through your mind? Take me back to that day as best as you can.
When they told us that we were going to go to Madison,
yeah.
We were excited because it felt like there was progress. And the tests that are being done in Madison are really specific. So we knew, okay, after this, they're going to know. Yes or no, are we even considered at this point? When you go to Madison, it's a full day of testing, 7:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. You have to do a 24-hour urine sample. You have to be fasting. They do a ECG, so they look at your heart. They do a CT scan to look at your organs. You meet with the physician's assistant because the surgeon's busy. In fact, when she walked in, she said, he's actually in a kidney transplant surgery right now. And I said, I would kind of expect that to be the case. That's why we're here.
Right.
Lots of blood work. The dietitian talks to you and the social worker. And the longest appointment was with the social worker to talk about what you kind of mentioned a few minutes ago, what this is really about, and are you really ready for this?
All right, let's talk about that conversation as long as we're there.
Yeah.
The questions that are asked, for a lot of people, again, we're talking about it in the abstract, as this is something that could happen at some point down the road, but mm-hmm. now you're there.
Mm-hmm.
You're in it.
Yeah.
You're making decisions that affect your whole family and the rest of your life.
Yep.
What are the questions that are asked in that conversation?
They ask, has your loved one, because in this case, I know the person I'm trying to give a kidney to, mm-hmm. because there are people that are willing to be living organ donors because that's their calling and they don't know who the person is. They ask, has my loved one put any pressure on me? Have they guilted me? What kind of conversations has that person had with me? They ask you, how would you feel if things maybe don't go the way you would like them to? Like, let's say recovery takes really long.
Organ rejection.
Yep. Let's say there's complications. Let's say the surgery, it's laparoscopic, which means they just do 4 little incisions. It's amazing how they do this to remove the kidney. If there's issues, they have to open up the whole side of your body. And they talk about, how are you about your body? And what if you have these big scars and mental health? And what do you do when you're stressed? And who's your support system? And has there ever been a time that you've had anxiety? And how did you work through that? Or depression? They do talk a lot about, do you take any kind of antidepressants, which I don't. And that's fine for people that do. But they want to know what they're dealing with, because there is sort of a mental side to this where you may not feel like yourself afterwards. I mean, you won't feel like yourself immediately afterwards. But how are you going to feel if, like you said, you give a kidney and it doesn't work? And how are you going to work through that kind of stuff? So they talk a lot about that.
How long is that conversation?
That was an hour and a half conversation.
What's the next step after that?
So from there, then the nurse comes in and she does a physical and she will just talk through kind of what recovery would be like for me, those kinds of things. Because the recovery for the average person, and the disclaimer here, by the way, is that this is just our situation. Everyone's is different. So this isn't the standard. For me, if I give a kidney, it's going to be about 6 to 8 weeks of recovery. First 2 weeks are pretty painful. And then from there, I just have to limit my physical activity. I can't really lift anything heavier than 10 pounds. They don't want you to do any driving because think of a seatbelt and placement,
sure.
or just
mm-hmm.
twisting your body and things like that. They will do blood work. There'll be a follow-up. that's kind of what the recovery is for the person giving the kidney.
In terms, I want to go back to the conversation with the social worker for just a second. How did you feel right after the conversation? Did you feel better, more nervous, less nervous, more at peace? How were you feeling after the conversation?
I was so excited. This whole process has been really fulfilling and exciting for me to go through. And when we were wrapping up the conversation, they talked to you about a mentorship program. I don't know if all hospitals offer that. I can only speak from my experience at UW Health. But the mentorship program is where they would have someone that's in my similar situation contact me and tell me what their experience is like. It's not a nurse. It's not a social worker. It's just a regular person that's willing to walk someone through this. To tell you how I felt when we were wrapping up, I said, if I give a kidney, can I be a mentor to someone?
Wow.
And he was like, that'd be great. I said, yep, I would love to do that.
Okay. Well, another one of the conversations, you were talking about the familial match because you were deemed a better match than Eric. I mean, we're talking about Camille is Eric's mother.
Biological mother, yes. Yeah. So what happens during these questions when they talk about the family medical history, it wasn't really safe for Eric to give up an organ, even though he's perfectly healthy now and he works out, he takes care of himself, because the cards are already against him because kidney disease does run inside of his family, because Camille's mom had poor functioning kidneys. Camille's grandma had poor functioning kidneys. Eric's uncle currently has kidney cancer. And there's diabetes, and there's just a lot that would be working against him. And he, on his own, decided, I don't think this makes the most sense for me to continue, because the genetics team will likely look at all of his stuff and will likely say, hang on here, this may not be the best idea. And it was a big relief to myself, to his mom, to his dad, to a lot of people in his family, because we all felt like, he's a helper. I mean, you know, Eric, he wants to save the day and help people. And that's why we love him so much. But I said to him one night, I said, I'm a wife before I'm a daughter-in-law, and you have a young son, and any parent doesn't want their kid to be put in harm's way to help them. It's a circle of life.
Sure.
A parent would say, no, I'm going to go first. Mm-hmm. That's how it's supposed to be.
Right.
And it just didn't make sense for him to continue on.
So you've gone through the day at UW Health in Madison.
Yeah.
You just talked to the social worker. I mean, are you the one right now?
I am the only person that they are working with right now. So the really exciting news is, after all of that, they told me, and it's funny how they said it, so I'm going to quote them. They had great news, and they said, your kidney is ripe for transplant.
I've never heard that one before.
As Radar said, right, you are ripe for the picking. And I'm
literally
like, that's awesome. And then I thought, cool, okay, we're done. No, you're not done yet. There's still more. The surgeon, then, he has to look at all of the test results, and he has to see, am I medically fit to give a kidney? Now, at this point in the process, they are talking to me about, if you are not a match for Camille, would you be willing to go into the paired kidney exchange program? Now, what that is if I have a kidney that is strong, healthy, ripe, ready for transplant, but I'm not a match for Camille, I can enter my kidney into the National Kidney Registry. So it's the whole United States.
Sure.
And they will find in their database, they'll check UW Health first. Mm-hmm. So it could be a local person or someone, I guess, that's in maybe Minnesota or Illinois, but it could be a Midwestern person. They'll check if I am a match in there. And for me putting my kidney in there and giving it to a stranger, that will then give Camille the opportunity to get a kidney from a stranger.
Oh,
so it's
okay.
A kidney for a kidney.
Sure.
And she'll get a quote unquote perfect match, and she'll get it faster because it'll be within 6 months.
Okay. That's the part of the process I had no idea about.
Same. I had no idea about that. But this is when they're starting to talk to me about this,
okay,
where they're starting to say, okay, you may not be a match. Would you want to do that? And those are the conversations that we've been having a lot about here at home. Because giving a kidney to Camille is, yeah, let's do it. That's why we're doing this. But to give it to a stranger brings up some other
Thoughts.
Should I tell you the update of where things are at?
Yeah, go ahead. Reveal whatever you want to reveal. This is going to the masses.
This is part of the waiting process. I was told again the first week of December that my kidney is ripe for transplant. That's great news. We called Camille and we said, we're getting there. Well, they only meet, some of these committees only meet on Wednesdays. Then they only meet on Thursdays. So I have to wait a whole week. Well, then the following week, I have a nurse coordinator who's just for me. Mm-hmm. So there's a nurse coordinator handling everything who talks to Camille's nurse coordinator. Mm-hmm. And then I have my own representative, someone that if I have any issues or concerns, and she's amazing. That whole team is so amazing. She called me after all of these appointments. How are you feeling? What are you thinking? She's the one that's trying to get me in contact with a mentor just to start asking some of these other questions. And then the following week, the surgeon looked at everything and the surgeon gave me the green light and said, you are ready for surgery. So Eric and I are listening on speakerphone and we're all excited and like crying. We're like, oh my God, I'm a match. And then Thomas, the nurse coordinator, said, we're not done yet. There's another step. Now this step is, this is where the genetics team will take Camille's medical information, all of it. She takes, I don't know why I keep saying she. I don't know who he or she is. I don't even know if it's like five people, but they keep saying the genetics team. They look at all of Camille's stuff. They look at all of my stuff. And they meet on Thursdays. And what's next week Thursday?
It's Christmas.
Christmas Eve.
Or Christmas Eve, yeah.
What's the following week? New Year's Eve. So
Merry Christmas.
We are waiting.
Well, we're recording this on Sunday. This is going to be out on Wednesday. So we're in real time here.
We are in real time, but we're not going to know because they're not going to be meeting on Christmas Eve.
How hard is the waiting?
It's really hard. It's because we just want to know what's the next step. What's going to happen here? Am I a match? Am I not? If I'm not a match, am I going to do the paired kidney exchange, which is the best way to get a perfect kidney mm-hmm. for Camille? And that's, I'm definitely leaning towards doing that to...
That's a hard decision too, because
but
again, it helps. At the end of the day, it's still helping Camille,
and that was the goal.
Yeah,
through all of this was to help Camille, and I've just found all of this to be so informative and overwhelming and inspiring, and all of this has just felt so right, Doug. That like I just feel like this is I'm supposed to do this. I can't explain it. I get heart butterflies every time they call because I'm so excited. Mm-hmm. And every time we get good news that it's moving forward, I get so emotional because I'm so hopeful that it's going to happen.
How are you preparing yourself mentally and physically for actually going into surgery and getting this done? Because like you said, I mean, this could be within a few months, I guess.
Yeah. They said if I'm a match for Camille, COVID has delayed living organ surgeries, transplants at UW Health. They are not going to have anything till after February 1st because so many resources are being used for COVID patients right now. So we'll have some time.
Okay.
We'll have some time. If I do the paired kidney exchange, I could find out in a couple days if I'm a match. I could find out in less than 6 months. But even when we do find out, likely the surgery wouldn't happen for another 3 to 6 weeks. I don't know why that is, but that's just what they told me.
Okay. So it's coming up.
Heck yeah, it's coming up.
How are you preparing yourself mentally and physically for that?
I'm working out a lot, trying to get strong. Because I can't work out afterwards.
You're not going to be able to.
I know, I'm not going to be able to work out for a while. I am already starting to make adjustments to my diet. And I don't have to make a lot. Thankfully, I'm someone that already has a healthy lifestyle. I work out. I eat well. I don't drink a lot. I don't smoke. I have been blessed with very good genes. We have a really clean bill of medical history in my family, which, knock on wood, is amazing. So I don't have to make a lot of adjustments, but you can't take ibuprofen, for example,
okay,
when you give a kidney because it's bad for your kidneys. Okay. If you have one kidney, you can't take ibuprofen.
Okay.
When I was talking to the nurse in Madison, she said, you know what? You should just probably already get rid of it. And I said, yeah, I probably should. So now it's Tylenol.
Okay.
That's sort of something I guess I'm preparing for. We're also trying to limit the amount of protein and potassium that I have in my diet because too much of that is not good for the kidneys. But I don't have to make too many other changes.
And so say a year from now, after everything is all well and good, we're all praying that
it goes well.
That it goes well, that Camille's healthy a year from now, that you're healthy a year from now. How different will your life be a year from now when you and I are doing the follow-up next Christmas.
I feel like it'll give my life a little bit more purpose. One of the hardest things through a lot of this has been I have not been able to successfully have a child, a biological child. Thank you. My husband's Brooklyn XR. And I've struggled with that. I mean, I've tried to have my own baby for 14 years. I was married before and had a really awful miscarriage, and I have just undiagnosed infertility. And I've had a lot of anger towards my body for not being able to have a child. And I come from a family of rabbits where people just get pregnant standing next to each other. And then there's Elizabeth, who's always wanted kids and a lot of kids and a big family. And I come from a big family, and I've never been able to do that. And I went through years of trying to figure out, like, why? I take care of myself. I'm healthy. They can't figure it out. And a couple years ago, through a lot of therapy and just a lot of reflecting, and I got to a point of I was tired of being angry about what I don't have, and I wanted to be excited and enjoy what I do have, which is a great life. And I've come to peace with all of that. And Eric and I are looking towards our retirement, and Brayson in a couple years is going to be in college, and we're looking forward to that. And we're not trying to have kids. And then this situation came up, and I just started to think, and not to put pressure on myself, because I understand that God has a plan. I do believe in that very much. And I just felt like if this is what I'm supposed to do, then let's do it. And if this is how I can give life, then maybe that's what I'm supposed to do. Because if I had had that baby, I would have had an 8-year-old now, because it was 2012. If I had had that baby, would I be in the mindset right now that I'd want to give up a kidney? I don't know. Because I'd have a really young kid that would need me. And if I was able to have that baby, I probably would have maybe been able to have more kids. That I just don't know. I don't think I'd be in the mindset to decide if I would want to do this for someone else. Because there are risks. There are definitely risks. Someone that gives a kidney runs the risk of developing diabetes, hypertension, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, all those kinds of things. But thankfully, I already have this healthy lifestyle. I don't have to worry about a lot of that happening, but you better believe I'm not going to all of a sudden eat like garbage and drink like crazy. I'm going to be smart about it because I know I'm at a little bit of a higher risk. But that's where this has become really fulfilling, not only just to save my mother-in-law's life, but the fact that I could be a part of this paired kidney exchange and the reach and the depth of that really touches me because I just have so many moments through this process, Doug, where I feel like I'm supposed to do this. I'm supposed to be doing this. Since I went public with it on the air in December, and that's because my mother-in-law was finally okay with it, and I respect her wishes completely. But as I was moving further along in this process, she recognized this impacts you too. So I get that you would need to talk about this, and I'm going to be missing work.
Yeah.
But also, this platform, look what you and I are doing. This can increase awareness and maybe inspire someone that is looking maybe for a way to impact the world, I guess. But maybe there's someone listening that is hoping for a kidney because I've talked to so many people that are on the list that are waiting. Maybe this will give them hope, perhaps. That's powerful stuff. And that's why I'm glad we're talking about it, because since I've talked about it publicly, I had the American Kidney Fund reach out to me, which is the largest nonprofit raising funds and awareness for kidney disease. And this guy called out in DC and they wanted to do a blog post. And then he talked about different ways to get involved with the American Kidney Fund. And he said, we go to DC once a year and we talk to senators and congressmen and women to try to get legislation changed. And I said, Ben, how can I do that? And he's like, you want to be a part of that? I said, hell yeah, I want to do that. I mean, we'll do the blog post too.
Sure, yeah.
But I'm like, I want to do that. So that's called being an ambassador. And I'm already going to be virtually this year at their big convention, March 17th in DC. And I don't even know if I'm giving somebody a kidney or not, but I said, I'm all in with this. Let's do it. It's just giving me like a different purpose in life.
I think that's number one, something that's fantastic. Number two, I think that's a good place to end.
Yeah, right. Because we don't know yet.
Yeah, we don't. And again, as I said at the outset, Erica and I are both in awe of the selflessness that you're going through right now. Our hearts go out to you and Eric and Brayson and the whole family and Camille and, you know, Marion and Jack and
everybody.
Andy and everybody and Steve, the whole
family. Well, because Doug, this is your family too.
Yeah, it is.
And you know that about the Hammies, which is why they're so awesome.
Yeah.
Like you, when you are a friend of the Hammies, you're family with the Hammies.
Yeah.
They're from day one. They just bring you in with open arms. They're some of the best people, the most giving people. And that's where this is an easy decision to do something like this for Camille.
It's an amazing gift. It's the gift of life. And that's the one gift that doesn't have, I mean, literally a price that you can attach to it. It's
well, and it sounds so big when you say it like that, but this being the holiday season, I was talking with a friend of mine and we were just talking about how it's a reminder to just give to others, big or small, because that's the ripple effect. If one person does something for someone else, how can that positively influence them to help another person? Whether it's someone buys you a coffee at Starbucks or someone waits and actually holds the door for you. Those little gestures affect people and it puts good energy out into the world. And that's what the holiday season is really about too. It's the season of giving.
Love you.
Love you too. Thanks for covering this, Doug. So excited to talk with you.
99.1 The Mix's Elizabeth Kay, who should know soon what the plan will be. And yes, we'll have a follow-up when it's appropriate. Some housekeeping. The website that she mentioned that we will link up in all of our descriptions of this episode of the podcast about UW Living Organ Donations and that whole program. The easiest thing to do is to Google UW Health Kidney Living Donor. But if you want the link, and again, we'll put it in our socials, we'll put it in the description. Here's what it is, and it's, you can write it down if you'd like. It is uwhealth.org/living-kidney/, there's no spaces in here. So it's uwhealth.org/living-kidney/donation/51738. What that means, I don't know. That's just the website. Like I said, we will link it up. But again, it is uwhealth.org/living-kidney/donation/51738. Thanks to Elizabeth Kay, her husband Eric, their son Brayson, and of course Camille, who all allowed me to help tell their story. The Hammy family, they are honestly the best people that you can know. And they're such a blessing and continue to be such a blessing in my life. That's it for this edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. We will have a shortened show on Friday for the Packers-Titans game. But we'll consider this the Christmas episode of the show. So I hope everyone has a wonderful and blessed Christmas. Sir Paul, play us out.
The mood is right. The spirit's up. We're here tonight. And that's enough. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time. The party's on. The feeling's here. That only comes this time of year. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time. Simply children sing.